Isaiah chapter 46 would be a good place to start. We're going to get there in a minute.
We're going to look at some things this morning regarding the integrity of God's Word. And I looked up that word integrity because I felt like, well, I'd like to know what it means. And there's a few definitions. The one I felt was probably the closest when we talk about the integrity of God's Word. It was an uncompromising adherence to a code of values, basically. So, where are we at here? Isaiah 46? Okay. And in verse 9, it says, "Remember the former things of old, for I am God, and there are very few like me." No, I am God and none else. I am God and there is none like me, declaring the end from the beginning and from ancient times the things that are not yet done, saying, I hope my counsel shall stand and I'm going to be able to do all my pleasure. No, it says, my counsel shall stand and I will do all my pleasure, just so you know. So, having read this, you can turn to Genesis 3 if you like to. We'll give a quick overview. In Genesis 1:1, it says God created the heavens and the earth. And then in verse 2, it says the earth became without form and void. And then God did stuff in the later chapter of Genesis chapter 1 to bring it back, you know, into a habitable condition. And yet, if you compare, like, today, you could ask, okay, God says I'm going to do all my pleasure. Has that come into full fruition yet? No. Well, read this verse, Genesis 3:15. God says, and I'll put enmity between you, and he's talking to the serpent. I'll put enmity between you and the woman, and between your seed and her seed. It's going to bruise your head, and you're going to bruise his heel. In the renovated earth, if you want to call it that, this knucklehead is still around, right? if there's any question, Galatians 1:4 talks about this present wonderful age. What is it called? A present what?
Evil age.
Evil age. So is that how the world was in Genesis 1:1?
No.
So when you think about that, from that perspective, to this day, God has still not been able to duplicate what he had in Genesis 1:1. And yet in Isaiah 46, he said, my counsel is going to stand, and I am going to do what I want to do. He's not going to override anybody's freedom of will, but he's going to bring to pass what he wants. It hasn't yet happened, but God has said that it's going to happen. Which then brings into consideration, does God's Word have integrity? Because if it doesn't, you've probably met people where they say something, and there's one person in particular I'm thinking of years ago, I worked for this person, and somebody says, they came and said, you know, you can always tell when this person is lying, because if you look real close, if you see his lips moving, that's how you know. And that was kind of sort of right. Well, you know, but he said things, but his word didn't have integrity. So when he said stuff, it really didn't mean anything. Look at Deuteronomy 31. While you're turning there, I'll remind you, the Genesis 3:15, you know, God had made that declaration. Then later he told Abraham that that seed would come through Abraham. And then God told Abraham that the promise wasn't going to go through Ishmael, which was Abraham's first son by Hagar. God says, the promise is going to go through Isaac. And then to Isaac, the promise did not go to Isaac's first son, Esau. It went through Jacob. And then God changed Jacob's name to Israel. So the promise that God made in Genesis 3:15, it's going to bruise your head, you're going to bruise his heel. That promise was going now through Israel. With that little catch up, here we are in Deuteronomy 31, verse 16. It says, and the Lord said to Moses, behold, you're going to sleep with your fathers, he's going to die, and this people, Now, the this people, that's talking about the children of Israel, the ones through whom the promised seed was going to be coming. This people will rise up and go a-whoring after the gods of the strangers of the land, whither they go, to be among them, and will forsake me and break my covenant which I have made with them. Verse 17, but that's okay, because... It doesn't say that's okay, does it?
No.
It says, then my anger shall be kindled or ignited against them in that day. You know, if you had five cases of dynamite in this room, that's fine. You know, you could sit on it, you could prop your feet up on it, no problem at all. Long as it's not ignited. If it gets ignited, that's a different story, right? God said, then my anger is going to be ignited in that day, against them in that day. And I'm going to forsake them, and I'll hide my face from them, and they're going to be devoured. And many evils and troubles shall befall them, so that they will say, in that day, are not these evils come upon us, because our God is not among us. Verse 18, and I will surely hide my face in that day for all the evils which they shall have wrought, in that they're turned unto other gods. Now, you've heard the expression, sounds like that person painted themselves into a corner, right? Or that person wrote a check they can't cash. So here's God in Genesis 3:15 making a promise, told Abraham, Isaac, Israel, it's coming through you. Here's the seed that he promised in Genesis 3:15, and in Deuteronomy 31:17 or 16 or whatever, he says they're going to be consumed. Well, if they're going to get consumed in Deuteronomy 31, how is that seed going to come that he promised in Genesis 3? Does God's word really have integrity? How could he do both? It looks like he could either do this one or else that one. How is he going to do both? Turn to Esther chapter 3 before we get too deep in this. Esther chapter 3. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Esther. Or Esther, Job, Psalm, yeah, whichever way you want to go. Esther, Job, Esther chapter 3. And this would seem to be pretty relevant to Deuteronomy 31, what we read there. Esther chapter 3, now this is the children of Israel. They're in this kingdom where they are. And this guy who at this time was second in command in this kingdom is talking to the guy who's first in command in this kingdom where a whole bunch of Jews live. Verse 8. And Haman said to King Ahasuerus, there's a certain people scattered abroad and dispersed among the people in all the provinces of your kingdom. And their laws are diverse from all people. Neither do they keep the king's laws. Therefore, it's not for the king's profit to put up with these guys. Verse 9. If it please the king, let it be written that they may be destroyed, and I'll pay 10,000 talents of silver to the hands of those that have the charge of the business to bring it into the king's treasuries. And the king took his ring from his hand and gave it unto Haman, the son of Hammedatha the Agagite, the Jew's enemy. So the king basically said, here's the checkbook, you know, do what you need to do.
Yeah.
Verse 11, and the king said to Haman, the silver's given to you, the people also, to do with them whatever you want to, as it seems good to you. Verse 12, then were the king's scribes called on the 13th day of the first month, and there was written according to all that Haman had commanded unto the king's lieutenants, and to the governors that were over every province, and to the rulers of every people of every province, according to the writing thereof, and to every people after their language, in the name of King Ahasuerus was it written and sealed with the king's ring. So they get it to everybody. Got to put the word every in there once or twice, you know. Everybody got it in all the provinces. And all the governors did it in everybody's own language, so nobody was missed. Everybody got the memo, so to speak. Verse 13, and the letters were sent by post into all the king's provinces to destroy, to kill, and to cause to perish. All what?
Jews.
Well, if you're going to kill all the Jews, and the promised seed is going to come through Israel, which is the Jews, that don't look too good, does it?
Mm-hmm.
So, It was written to destroy, to kill, and cause to perish all Jews, both young and old, little children and women, in one day, even upon the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month Adar, and to take the spoil of them for a prey. So that would look like, you know, what God had talked about back there in Deuteronomy 31. If you do these things, you know, you're going to be devoured. To devour something, you eat it up. And if you read the records in between, you know, after Deuteronomy 31 and before this stuff here in Esther, that happened. I mean, it was horrible. A lot of stuff that happened to them. It was a bloodbath. They were slaughtered. I mean, the things that happened to them, you don't even want to read about, but God put it in there. But were they made extinct?
No.
Obviously not. I mean, there's still some here. God had not said in Deuteronomy 31, you know, they shall be made extinct. He said they shall be devoured. So, you know, there is a difference, right? If it's down to one person, well, you'd need two, I guess, to regenerate. But if it was down to two people, they're still not made extinct, right? Like we have that, you know, in nature places, they say this group of animals or this bird or whatever, it has become extinct. Or maybe we only have one left, so we know it's going to be extinct. So, you know, there's nothing left. But God had not said in Deuteronomy 31 to be made extinct, but they were devoured. They were slaughtered. So here in Esther 3, it looks like, okay, this might be the very end of it. Before we look at some other stuff, turn to chapter 9 of Esther. We'll sort of read what actually happened, and then we'll look at some other stuff. So in chapter 3, the issue was given, the directive, kill them all. I don't care how old they are. I don't care how young they are. I don't care what their gender is. Kill them all. In chapter 9 of the book of Esther, in verse 5, it says, thus the Jews smote all their enemies with the stroke of the sword and slaughter and destruction, and did what they wanted to unto those who hated them. That was kind of a turnaround, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That's a little bit of a turnaround. Instead of all the Jews' enemies killing all the Jews, the Jews killed all their enemies. Which sort of leads you, this gets very interesting. One, how did that happen? Well, we would say, well, this is in God's word, so obviously God had probably something to do with it. Either that, or these people were just shot full of luck. Right? Something had to have happened. How many times do you read the word God or Lord or Almighty or anything like that in the book of Esther?
None.
Not once. God doesn't say, not once, the Lord said this or the Lord did that. Not once. Had God said in Deuteronomy 13, I will hide my face from them? He had said that, hadn't he? This gets to be, it's really awesome. I printed this stuff out so you could see it. There's an appendix in the Companion Bible. It's appendix 60. And he points out in that appendix, in the Hebrew, the name of God is hidden. Four times it's Jehovah, and one time it's Yeah, I guess is how you pronounce it. You know, which means I will become. The first time is in, if I can get to it here, chapter 1, verse 20. And I printed it out real big, so hopefully you can see it. I can't see it, but chapter 1, verse 20. Maybe I'll read it here. Esther chapter 1, verse 20. It says, and when the king's decree which he shall make shall be published throughout all his empire, for it is great, all the wives shall give to their husbands honor, both to great and small. And to get the Jehovah is J-V, what is it? J-H-V-H or something like that? J-H-V-H, the consonants. That's the abbreviation they would give in Hebrew. So to do it in English, to just paraphrase it so you can see it, instead of saying,
all the wives shall give to their husbands honor, they would say, do respect our ladies shall give to their husbands. And the D-R-O-L is Lord spelled backwards. You know, to paraphrase it in English, it would be J-H, it would be J-H-V-H, Jehovah. And it was written in majuscular, which means larger than the other letters. It was not written in bold letters, you know, capital letters with bold print. It was not written like that. Here's a more accurate representation of majuscular down here, where you can see, if I, yeah, there's the do respect our ladies. And the letters are larger than the other letters. But you could pretty easily read it and not notice that those letters are larger than the other letters. It's kind of like, if it was written like this, pardon me, this would be kind of like, you know, it says, when the Magi saw his star, they rejoiced with exceeding great joy. And, you know, you get the pictures on the Christmas cards where it's like a spotlight, you know, like, what's the name of that bar? Bar A over by us, you know, they do these things. Oh, what's going on over there? If it was like that, everybody in the whole countryside would have been coming. Oh, what, are they giving away free beer? What's going on? You know, it wasn't like the Magi saw it because they knew what they were looking at. They were familiar with the stars. So to them, they recognized what was being communicated. People who read the Hebrew text, if they weren't really familiar with it, they might not notice, huh, those letters are larger than the others. They're just reading over it right before they have to go get a cup of coffee or something. But those who were really looking close, they would notice. And God said he would hide his face. Well, if you play hide and seek, you typically don't go hide out in the middle of an empty parking lot, right? Not a very good location to hide. But if you hide someplace, somebody could find you if they were doing what? Looking real carefully and real closely. And that's how these letters were. They were not like this. I just did this so you could see it easier. It was more like this. You probably can't even notice the different size from the back. You might not be, I could hardly notice it. And I'm the one who printed it up. You know, but they are larger. But you have to look real close. That's because it's hidden, like he said in Deuteronomy 31. So that's the first. Where'd that folder go? There it is. So the second one is in, sorry about that, Antonetta. You're getting bumped around there. The second one is in Esther chapter 5, verse 4. Esther answered, if it seemed good to the king, let the king and Haman come this day into the banquet that I prepared for him. And paraphrase, just so you could see the name of God that was hidden there. It would say, Esther answered, if it seemed good unto the king, let our royal dinner be graced this day by the king and Haman. The first letter of let our royal dinner, spelling Lord. Or in the Hebrew, it would have been the abbreviation J-H-V-H. The third one.
5-4.
5-4 was that one. All right, now catch up. Chapter 7 here.
A mustard.
Catch up or put some mustard on it. Either way. What's the other stuff? You want a hot dog? Sauerkraut, and more bad. Yeah. Whatever you like.
What's the green one?
The green one? Pickle relish. No. Sweet relish.
Yeah, there we go.
That's what I like. The next one's in Esther, chapter 7, verse 7.
See it.
Okay. And I'll just read the last part of the verse. It says, Haman stood up to make requests for his life to Esther the queen, for he saw that there was evil determined against him by the king. And you could read the, or translate it, to paraphrase it, the last part of that verse. Haman stood up to make requests for his life to Esther the queen, for he saw that there was evil, last letter of the word evil, to, last letter of the word to, fear, last letter of the word fear, determined, last letter, against him by the king. Again, spelling Lord, but it's the last letter.
So if you go Lord, you go like evil, then the Lord against him by...
No, the last letter of evil, last letter of two, just where it was hidden in there. And it wasn't in capital letters, in bold print like this is. It was just a little bit bigger. God had hidden his face from him. He was there, he was working, but he was hiding. And then we'll go to chapter 5. Oh, I got these in the wrong order, didn't I? Oh, well. Sorry about that. Sorry about that.
I put a little mustard on it. A little curveball there.
Umbrellas that threw you off.
This is when Haman was all upset because of some stuff you can read about. It says, 5:13, yet all this avails me nothing so long as I see Mordecai the Jew sitting at the king's gate. Paraphrase it, yet I am sad for no avail. The last letters of sad for no avail, spelling Lord backwards. I'm sad for no avail is all this to me so long as I see Mordecai the Jew sitting at the king's gate. So again, and there's a lot more detail about that. If you read that, it's a great appendix. Appendix 60 in the Companion Bible. This is like a small fraction of the detail. It's just amazing what God did there. The last one is this, you know, hey, yeah, I am that I am. Where is it? Moses, in Exodus 3:14, God told Moses, I will become what I will become. Mm-hmm. And God hid that name in Esther 7:5, paraphrased. It would say, then the king Ahasuerus answered and said to Esther the queen, where dwelleth the enemy that durst presume in his heart to do so? The last letters of the word, where dwelleth the enemy, would be Ewe. I will become what I will become. And so God did fulfill what he had said he would do. You know, he said he kept the promised seed alive that he had promised in Genesis 3:15. He kept the bloodline through Abraham, through Isaac, through Jacob, who became Israel. They were devoured. They were slaughtered. But they were not made extinct. God did hide his face, but he was still there working for them. And it's one of those things where one of the keys that we've been taught regarding how to understand the Bible, you have to be capable of recognizing the operation of the manifestations. With that viewpoint, reading the book of Esther just becomes exhilarating to see two people, basically, and how they knew that there were times in the book of Esther where they knew, if I do what God is instructing me to do, I am very likely, from a census point of view, I have seen my last sunrise. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be here tomorrow. From a census point of view, you know, and they knew it. And yet they did it because God said it. And apparently, if they did it, and it doesn't say that God told them, you know, but you have to read that and recognize that. And I thought it was just wonderful looking at how it could look like God had painted himself into a corner. And yet the words of the Lord are pure words, according to Psalm 12:6, right? So that integrity thing, you know, the uncompromising adherence to a standard, they're pure words. It's not like, well, they're mostly pure, you know, but there's a little bit of lies here and there scattered throughout, but mostly they're pure. You know, not that it's uncompromising. Maybe if we go to Numbers chapter 23, this verse will be familiar to you, but very relevant verse to the topic. Numbers chapter 23. Yeah. And in verse 19, it says, God is not a man that he should lie. You know, he's not one of those guys where you say, if you see his lips moving. You know, for God, it would be just the opposite. How do you know if God's telling the truth? Well, if you look real close, if you see his lips moving, well, that's how you know he's telling the truth. God's not a man that he should lie. Where is it? I lost my verse. Neither the son of man that he should change his mind. Has he said, and shall he not do it? Or has he spoken, and shall he not make it good? And those are rhetorical questions. If he said it, he's going to do it. Like he said in Isaiah 46:10, my counsel is going to stand, and I'm going to do all my pleasure. And realizing also that to this day, God has never been able to duplicate what he had in Genesis 1:1. The price has been paid. Jesus Christ fully paid the price. The price has been paid. The money's in the bank. God just hasn't cashed the check yet because he's not willing that any man should perish. But for God to have said, my counsel shall stand, to see, this was just one example in the book of Esther and Deuteronomy where it looked like God had painted himself into a corner where you can't do Genesis 3:15 and Deuteronomy 31. But he did. You know, and it, so many things in life where it could look like in this situation here, there's just no way out. Well, there was no way out for the Jews in Esther 3. You know, that was the second in command. The writing went throughout the entire kingdom. You guys are all dead. There was no way out. But there was, you know, because God made a way. And just thought that was a great example that exhibited the integrity of God's word.